Good for New York, says another texter. You're up, Mayor Lightfoot. Yeah, we haven't done that in the city of Chicago yet. We're not mandating that you have a proof of vaccination to get into a restaurant. New York City's doing it. Other countries have done it. Should Chicago do it? That's going to be our new news click at WGNradio.com, which is not why I called Alderman Hopkins, but let me start there. Alderman, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN Radio. Brian Hopkins from the Second Ward, how are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning.
Streeterville, Gold Coast, Lincoln Park, Bucktown, Ukrainian Village, a lot of fine restaurants there. Again, not why we called, but that's just breaking news, Alderman. What's your attitude about requiring proof of vaccination?
I support it. I think it's the right thing to do. You know, it's if we successfully get through the Lollapalooza experience without turning that into a super spreader from last weekend, it will be largely because of the vaccination mandate, the testing mandate, and being required to show proof. We do know that there were some degree of fraudulent credentials offered, but you know, I don't know how you solve that problem. You're always going to have that. But to at least make the effort to require people to be vaccinated, it's probably the best thing we can do right now to reduce spread with the more infectious Delta variant out there.
And it's not even certain that that would hurt business. I mean, maybe it would be neutral. That is, folks would go with more confidence, and there's plenty of people vaccinated. So it's not like you're diminishing the population. There'd be plenty of people that could still eat out.
Yeah, I think an interesting case study for the business model here will be the airline industry, because what we're seeing is, you know, the airlines have for years figured out a way to charge people more for what they want, whether it's first class or a wider seat or a better meal. So if they start having flights where they have some measure of vaccination guarantee that, you know, every passenger on the flight is vaccinated and you have that assurance, are you willing to pay a little more for that seat? Let's find out. I think the market will speak on this and will say, look, you know, if you're a business owner and you can provide that level of assurance, there's a certain customer who is going to be loyal to you and possibly even willing to pay a little bit more. I think we're going to see that trend in the months to come.
No kidding. You had actually imagined vax-free restaurant and there's a 3% surcharge or something like that?
You know, a lot of people would be willing to pay it, you know, especially as we get into a fourth wave scenario right now, which, you know, make no mistake, we're at the beginning stages of it, and it's going to happen. It's inevitable. You know, and when we get into those periods of time where COVID spread is just uncontrolled like wildfire, I think that's a time when people would be willing to pay some type of surcharge to have an activity that would be dangerous otherwise,
yeah,
but would be safe if they had some reassurance and some guarantee that everybody who they're with and that group of strangers happens to be vaccinated. What's that worth to you if you're trying to avoid catching this disease?
Well, we did that on the front end of the pandemic, but that was to help the businesses mitigate the cost of new air filtration systems and stuff like that. If we had to pay some sort of COVID surcharge to help them on the back end, that might just be for economic reasons to help them get through this. I'm hopeful that, in fact, enough people would go out. The restaurants would still be able to be at capacity. And I'm hoping that, you know, people aren't going to run away because of a vaccine mandate in the city. We don't have that yet. Would you propose that, or where does that have to come from, the mayor, or could that come from the city council?
Yeah, actually, it can be a legislative initiative, and I'm in conversation right now with a couple of my colleagues. What we're looking at is some type of a city-mandated rating system, particularly for restaurants, since you mentioned them. There's a great disparity with regard to the way restaurants treat ventilation and filtration. And if I can just, if I may, just put in a plug for one chain in particular,
sure.
The Let Us Entertain You restaurant chain, months ago invested millions of dollars in ventilation and filtration systems in all their restaurants. They tried some of the newest technology that was being offered, UV light arrays, MERV filters, all sorts of things. I think they even have CO2 monitors in some of their restaurants. They went well over and above what any other restaurant chain was doing at the time at a substantial cost to them. Well, okay, they're entitled to market that fact. And if customers are looking for the safest indoor environment they can in terms of the way the air is treated, that's one example of someone that has really tried to do it right. So what we're suggesting is some type of a rating system similar to the LEED system for environmental, sustainable structures, where you've got platinum, you've got gold, you know, and you could, as a restaurant, you could have some type of emblem on your door saying that you meet a platinum standard or a gold standard or whatever it would be,
yeah,
that the engineers have looked at what you're doing and have certified that you've gone about as far as you can to make the air safe. People are going to be more comfortable dining in an environment like that when they know that some steps have been taken to keep the air as clean as possible.
Sort of like the City of Chicago Seal of Good Housekeeping or something like that. Alderman Brian Hopkins from the Second Ward is on the phone. And the reason we called, though, was not about this. I'm glad to hear that, though, Alderman. But let me take a quick break and come back and answer this question for us. What are you hearing about the motorcycle problem in Chicago? Good grief. You know, it's not bad enough. We had violence last year and the pandemic both years. And I don't know, it was humid the other day, too. Now we've got this motorcycle thing. Will you just talk to us about what, if anything, the city can do about that? Brian Hopkins from the Second Ward. Alderman, we just got a ton of calls and texts from people really frustrated with, sometimes terrified by these columns of motorcycles, not only on the city, but sometimes on the city streets, sometimes on the sidewalks. Are you hearing about this too?
Oh, absolutely. It's a good segue from our previous topic, because if you're afraid to dine inside a restaurant, we have so many outdoor sidewalk cafe options available in Chicago. And if you take advantage of that, it's highly likely during the course of your dining experience, you're going to be interrupted by the deafening roar of motorcycles, hopefully not driving on the sidewalk where you're dining, but certainly going past you on the street, blasting loud music and having open pipes and no mufflers. It's really endemic. It's happening all over the city. It's happening all over the Midwest, actually. And it's a problem we just don't seem to have a good solution for.
I guess there's not enough police officers in the city to, on every street corner, when a loud motorcycle goes by, pull them over and write them a ticket, huh?
Well, we have enhanced the fines and the penalties. I've sponsored, in the last 4 years, I've sponsored three different ordinances, along with my fellow downtown alderman, Alderman Riley, to increase the fines and penalties. And every time we do that, we expect to see, some impact. But that still requires the engagement of law enforcement. These laws don't enforce themselves. You still have to find a way to detain the motorcycle operators, pull them over, or catch them when they're parked, because, as everyone knows, we do have a no pursuit policy in place with the Chicago Police Department. They can't pursue people on motorcycles. And even if they tried, chances are they're not going to catch them. These devices have been modified to the point where they can, easily exceed speeds of 180 miles an hour. And first of all, it's inherently dangerous to try and chase a vehicle going that fast. And they're probably going to be able to elude you anyway. And that's actually part of the culture. They have helmet cams, and we see frequently they're posting videos where they're trying to provoke the police to chase them. And then they just take off and they post that video, kind of bragging about how quickly they were able to escape the long arm of the law. So it's actually part of the culture. It's part of the thrill. Where they're trying to get the police to engage them. As I said, we don't have a good solution. There's hundreds and hundreds of them in a pack. We have at most a dozen police officers who might be available in that district at that time. So they're outgunned, they're outnumbered, and they're outmotored. And the motorcyclists know it. So they're just they're having a field day right now. They know there's very little to stop them from what they're doing. And if anything, the problem just seems to be getting worse as more and more motorcyclists join in the fun.
It does that. I don't know why that's happening now. And Lord knows we've all got enough on our minds. We don't need that. And I know they don't care that we know that. What about the no pursuit policy? If the police see you doing something that is against the law, they can pursue you, right?
Yeah, they can. You've got to get permission from the watch commander. So if you're a police officer, you're a patrol officer, and you happen to have what they call an on view, which is exactly what it sounds like, you personally observe a crime being committed. In the example we're talking about, it could be motorcycles driving on the sidewalk, doing wheelies, driving recklessly. You know, that's a felony reckless endangerment act. And you're a police officer and you see that happen. You can't just flip on the blue lights and stomp the accelerator pedal and go after them. You've got to call in, explain to the watch commander what you've just seen, and get permission to pursue. Now, the watch commander has a decision to make, and there's some guidance there. There has to be a reasonable suspicion that a life will be lost if the pursuit is not engaged in, or someone, you know, has just potentially murdered someone and is attempting to flee the scene of a major felony crime like murder. Under those circumstances, the watch commander can say, well, okay, you know, pursuit is still dangerous, but in this case, it's justified. Go ahead,
yeah.
Give it your best shot. 9 times out of 10, probably more than that, they don't feel it meets that criteria, so they deny permission to pursue. Or if the police officers are engaged in a pursuit, they'll be told to terminate it immediately, and they have to obey that order from their commanding officer. So that's the way the no pursuit policy works. It's not just motorcycles, really. It's all vehicles. And now, you know, we're even reviewing the foot pursuit policy in wake of the Adam Toledo incident. So police officers know that chasing any offender is a potentially complicated decision, and they may get themselves in trouble if they do it right. So it's an incentive to not pursue and to not engage in a high speed risky endeavor like that.
Yeah, we hear a lot about the stand down policy and also the stand down attitude that police have, and for some of the reasons you've enumerated, I guess it really does stem from the Adam Toledo shooting, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of it does come from that. You know, there's actually a national effort to examine foot pursuit policies in police departments all over the country right now as part of that, because, you know, it happens all the time. You know, people see someone behaving suspiciously and they start to run. Right there, it's confirmation that the suspicious behavior was probably related to some type of criminal activity. So to chase them is indicated. You know, we had another situation involving a Home Depot in the McKinley Park neighborhood where a security guard was shot and killed as a result of a foot pursuit. So it's a very dangerous thing. You know, it's something that I think we'll be spending a little more time and attention at the new police training academy when that comes online, hopefully next year. Better training is a big part of the answer to a lot of these questions.
And better policies. And policies, too.
Better policies, right.
If the training is let them go, well, then that doesn't help me. So I have not forgotten the Adam Toledo story. I also think the police officer acted within his right when he did shoot Adam Toledo, tragic as that was. But now we're off topic. I wanted to talk about motorcycles, and I don't have anything either, Alderman. I don't know what you do about 1,000 motorcycles on the Stevenson or 100 of them on Michigan Avenue, making life miserable for everybody. And I also, I kind of don't like the sound of the conversation when we all sit there and wag our finger at those damn motorcycles when maybe they're not doing anything to break the law. So I think we need to be careful about that, too. But a lot of what we're seeing is more than annoying. There is a lot of danger, and there is a lot of quote-unquote law-breaking going on. And for the city to just throw up its hands and go, we don't know what to do about it, is really frustrating to hear.
It's very frustrating. And, you know, I'll say I myself owned a motorcycle for 20 years, and I traveled the country on it, loved every minute that I was in the saddle of that motorcycle. I sold it a few years ago when I got married, but not once in all my time riding a motorcycle did I ever think to myself, you know, this would really be more enjoyable if I was annoying everyone around me by making a deafening noise.
I don't understand that either. So here's what we're going to do.
It's not necessary.
Throw out those strips that puncture their tires, you know, and then that'll teach them. I mean, literally, the audience is ready to just put a stick in their spokes. And injuries be damned, because they don't seem to care anyway. You know, there's that sort of hostile attitude that the general citizens have now.
Well, I don't want to leave everyone completely frustrated and feeling hopeless, because there are some things that we're talking about doing. We actually did form a motorcycle enforcement task force last year, right before the pandemic hit, and that we had to kind of suspend what our plans were. But Alderman Riley and myself had sponsored legislation to install noise monitors, basically microphones, at key strategic locations that can detect large crowds of illegally modified motorcycles so we can track them around the city. And we've since gotten pretty good at that surveillance technology. So yeah. they're not hiding from us. We know where they are. We know where they're gathering. So there's some things that we can do using technology as a result of that.
I hope so.
The problem this summer is
I'm out of time.
The problem this summer is just the lack of personnel.
Brian Hopkins from the Second Ward. Nice to talk to you, Alderman. Let's chat again and keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate your attention to this.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, such as it is.